when people started complaining about wanting to talk about the issues. And then there was a large presence of police kicking us out of the commission's office. So it seems that Shell is very powerful here. Money really talks. And the fossil fuel industry in general. They did not come to saw us out of it. In fact, we thought they were going to let us stay there because the shift had already gone through its turnover. And there was really no point for them to get rid of us at that time, except that we were on the train tracks and there were fossil fuel trains that wanted to come through. So we stopped the trains from coming through for almost 4 hours. But at that point, I guess the trains, the fossil fuel businesses, were angry enough to convince the police that they had to get us out of there. And so they kind of treated us with kid gloves, but they did take us to jail. They spent a lot of time sawing the lock boxes that we were in. They gave us these big plastic cloths to cover us so we wouldn't be sprayed with any of the fire that they were using to drill. And then they allowed our support team to come with us to the jail. We were only there a short time.
Can you talk a little bit more about the Raging Grannies as a group and your philosophy?
Well, the Raging Grannies are an international group. They started in Vancouver about 25 years ago. And we're about 30 women, older women, who are politically active and mostly do our political activism with song and cute costumes. Lately, we've been doing bake sales in which we give away cookies to people along with the information we want them to know about a particular issue.
And you all are dedicated to preserving the earth for the next generation?
We're dedicated to protecting the environment, to social justice, to gun-free zones, to mental health issues. We have many grannies who are involved in many different issues, and yet we'll all come together to support one another in the issues that they feel, you know, most important.
You've been listening to the KBOO Evening News. KBOO Evening News is a volunteer-produced broadcast. Thank you for listening. Up next is Right to Survive Radio, and first, some messages for you.
KBOO Community Radio is accepting Toys for a Toy Drive conducted by McLaren's leadership in collaboration with McLaren Community Voice. The toys will be used during family visits for young family members visiting their loved ones in the McLaren Youth Authority. KBOO will have a barrel in their lobby from June 2nd to the 14th and will accept toys, stuffed animals in new or gently used condition. We will not turn down any donations. Your donations will be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
KBOO is having a contingent in the Pride Parade, and we would love it if you would join us.
Please let us know if we can count on you to walk with us in the Pride Parade, Sunday, June 14th.
We will be meeting at 10 a.m. in the area around the North Park blocks.
Join us, wave at people, be fabulous, be KBOO.
The parade steps off promptly at 11, and all contingent members are to be together and ready by 10:30 a.m.
Please join us for a wonderful, fun, and lively day at the Pride Parade.
Call 503-231-803 and ask for Ani at extension 213 for more information.
Again, this is KBOO Portland. Up next is Right to Survive Radio.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Faye with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Good evening and welcome to Right to Survive Radio. I am your host, Lisa Faye, and I will be bringing you interviews from Ibrahim Mubarak and co-director of KBOO, Monica Beamer. This show comes to you from the Water and Affordable Housing Forum held in Detroit, May 2015. Let me start with a little narration. We are a nation oppressed, terrorized by the very government we elect to serve our interest and keep us safe. Submissive to a government that gives unyielding power to corporations who destroy everything in their sight in the name of profit. We give power to a president that signs off on city managers to control populations, shutting off utilities, water to homes, then sending in child protective services to steal children, rip them from their homes and from their families. City banks and corporations foreclosing on homes, bulldozing and burning them to the ground while creating houselessness. We, as a people, through fear, are allowing this to continue and happen. The Environmental Protection Agency acknowledges disease and illness from contaminated air, soil, and water supplies, followed up by distorted lies, polluting and looting are killing our lives while corporations hide behind the laws. Domestic terrorism, or is it genocide? Lincoln predicted when corporations have been enthroned, an era of corruption in high places will follow. This is certainly and has truly come to flourishing in our lifetime with our generations in cities throughout this nation. It's not foreign. It's where we call home, America. These are some of the systemic issues Right to Survive brings awareness to throughout our education and outreach. As you listen to our interviews tonight, try and visualize how your life would be affected if you were living in Detroit, in Chicago, in the Appalachian Mountains, in New Mexico, in Southern California, in major cities across the country where corporations have taken over and destroyed the earth and our neighborhoods.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM, and today we're in Detroit, Michigan, and I'm here with Monica Beamer, and she's going to try her hand at interviewing.
So we're here at the first International People's Movement Summit on Water and Housing Rights, and it's just been amazing 3 days with about 400 people from across the globe, a lot in the United States and a lot here in Detroit, where the water struggles are vicious and deadly. And we did a tour of Detroit yesterday, and we're here with Valerie Jean, who is an activist and a person who helped with the tour, and I just learned so much from you yesterday. Thank you for the tour. And you know, I just had a few questions for you. You talked a little bit. One of the things I'm really interested in is talking to you about is this petroleum site that we went by yesterday. Can you talk a little bit about who that is, that corporation, and what they've been doing? We went and visited some folks whose houses are right next to the petroleum site and the impact on them, the impact on all of Detroit. But most importantly, importantly, how water is free and in massive quantities and then destroyed by these corporations while regular people who are trying to survive are getting their water cut off. That's really profound to me. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about the Marathon. Yeah.
Yes. In 48217, Marathon has a massive oil refinery. It was just a few years ago made a lot larger so that it could refine tar sands. Tar sands coming from the boreal forest in Alberta, Canada.
Is that a zip code, 48217?
48217 is in southwest Detroit. It's actually the most polluted zip code in Michigan and the third most polluted zip code in America. The industry down there is very, very thick, and they use our waterways and they pollute our air in a lot of ways. We've got steel refineries and things like that down there. But the Marathon refinery itself, this massive expansion, moved out some of the affluent people on one side of the refinery and left the other people on the other side of the refinery, the black and brown people and very, very poor white people, there and refused to buy their homes. Those people up close to the Marathon refinery have a barrage of health, horrific health problems.
They caught someone's house on fire with an explosion, created massive burns on the person, and are refusing to help or take responsibility. Is that what you were talking about a bit?
Yeah, one of the houses right outside of the Marathon refinery, it's right outside the coker, this very, very large tar sands coker. It's horrific. There was a horrible explosion one night that burned the side of the house that was right outside of it, but also the people that were sleeping on the inside had horrific chemical burns all over their bodies. The doctors have been paid off by Marathon, and they are refusing to admit that those things happened because of that explosion. Marathon pretty much writes the rules in Southwest Detroit. They deal with the EPA personally and contribute to the EPA.
Talk about how much water they use to process this oil.
Our guesstimate from all the stuff that we've looked up is around 30 million gallons a day. They don't put out that number. We have to go dig for it. So we're looking at around the same amount as they use as for a frack well, but they do it every day. And then when they use the water, they mix it with bitumen. So to make the tar sands, to make it more flowable, and also 10,000 other horrific chemicals that shouldn't even be on the planet being made. So they mix the water with that and the bitumen, and the water that's left is put in these huge, huge tailing ponds all over southwest Detroit. And as we were going by them yesterday, you could see that they leak, that there's scum dripping from the sides. But the reason that they put them in these tailings ponds is because they can't put it anywhere else. It can't go anywhere in the earth. It's very, very polluted, like nuclear waste.
So is this water, you say, is leaking into the land, and when people growing vegetables, are they eating this crude oil vegetable, or are they drinking this water? Are they bathing in this water? Are they watering their lawn with it?
That water can never be used again, and the people around it know it. They can't, if it is leaking in, of course, the soil, the air, it evaporates into the air. There's a whole, like, slew of ways that they're polluting with those tailings ponds. And it's just, if you go to Alberta, Canada, just, you know, for size, okay, their tailings ponds can be seen from space, and they are toxic wastelands, just absolute toxic wastelands that people will never, ever, ever be able to be around again.
So we're here, just changing subjects a little bit. Thank you for telling us more about that. It was very profound. We're here in Detroit. We're on the Great Lake. Massive amounts of water available to the people, and yet people's water is getting turned off. 50,000 people? Something. I would love to hear more about the experience. And yesterday we went on a tour of several of the neighborhoods. We saw the process was explained to us of the incredible numbers, and then also what happens to people with the blue stripe. That means shut off this person's water. They just go through, and you talked about, if you'd be willing to talk about your neighborhood and also the amazing work you did to get water to each other and continue to do and feed each other. But then also what's very profound is once the water's turned off, it's a new stripe. It's a white stripe. And then that means, okay, now child welfare. They're working with the water departments. They go in, they take the children, so they're shutting off people's water. And then because the water is shut off, they're saying you're a bad parent. And so they shut off people's water, create this unsafe situation, and then they're taking people's children. Would you be willing to speak a little bit about your neighborhood, both what happened, which I know is incredibly difficult, and then the incredible power of you and your neighborhood for saying we're going to take care of each other?
We don't know exactly the numbers. We know that 3,000 people were shut off a week last year. They give out 3,000 addresses at a time to a private company to shut that they paid $5.7 million to in Detroit. They paid $5.7 million to Homrick.
Why don't they just pay the bills instead of giving the money to people that shut off the water?
Because then Homrick couldn't make any money. I mean, really, that's the situation. If you spend $5.7 million and give it to Homrick instead of helping people keep their water on, it shows where you are. It shows what it's about. So we don't know exactly how many, as Maureen was talking on the bus yesterday. She said, we have no idea. For me personally, I watched them shut off my whole neighborhood in one fail swoop. It was early in the morning on January 14th, 2014. I was making coffee. I heard something out front. I looked out front and saw a big red Homrick truck. It said Detroit Water Collections Project on the side, which makes me visibly sick. Water Collections Project, really? So I grabbed my camera and my phone and rushed outside the second I got to my porch. I started documenting the scene and just let them know in a very firm voice that there was two gentlemen, that they were not going to shut my water off today. I made my way to my water access point and stood over it. It took about 1 second for him to kind of put his arm, he grabbed the water key, put his arms in the air and was like, okay. Put the water key back in his truck and then proceeded across the street to my neighbor's house, shut her off, and systematically for 45 minutes shut off my entire neighborhood. Everybody woke up because it was done so early in the morning. People woke up in complete despair, realizing that the whole neighborhood had been shut off and that we weren't even left with a way to help each other. At that point, I had put at some point in time, while I was standing on my water access point, I put a Facebook stat out to the public, that my whole neighborhood had been shut off and we were left no way to help each other. Within the hour, every kind person, every organization in Detroit worked together to get hundreds of gallons of water on my front lawn. We set up 2-week-long water station in my front lawn that was ran 24 hours a day by my family and other people, other community organizers. It became very clear that people were going to make the decision on whether to bathe with their water or to cook with their water. So we set up big pots of food, and people from all over the city come over, open up a can of beans, throw it in, and chop up vegetables, bring it over, throw it in. It was like this ongoing pot, really, really beautiful. About 5 days in of the crisis, we realized that we were mad as hell and that we had to do something. So we organized a community march. About 200 people showed up at the corner of my street in Woodward, and we marched through the neighborhood, gathered all of the children, all of the families, and took Woodward at rush hour in the evening. Took it all the way, about a mile. We took down Woodward for about a mile and then had a huge community meeting where we talked about neighborhood resistance and what it would look like for all of us to stand together against water, not just water shutoffs, but mass foreclosures, DTE shutoffs, anything that would take away our basic survival needs.
And Detroit, DTE is Detroit Edison. Electric.
Yeah.
Okay. And Woodward is one of the main thoroughfares mm-hmm. in Detroit. Just so folks understand, why is so many people's water being shut off in Detroit? Because people might be meaning, well, why are they shutting off people's water?
Well, first of all, the 1% has the will to do it. So you have to start there. They have the will to do it.
They're making money doing it, as you pointed out, 5.6 million.
$5.7 million, and that's just a small amount of money that Homrick's making around the city, because they're also demoing the whole city through the foreclosure.
Get out of your houses and they make money demoing.
Yes. So you have to kind of start from that basis, but also you can't have this conversation without understanding the basic wealth inequality that people are living with here. I mean, horrific wealth inequality where people can't muster up enough money to pay property tax, none of their basic needs. So, and you're looking at a time. Go ahead.
Just skyrocketing costs of water. Some people are talking about bills of like $400 a month. I mean, and then it just adds up.
Mm-hmm. Well, even the people, right, even the people who have lower bills, now those bills come from, there's these things, in the neighborhood, vacant houses and stuff that had frozen pipes and stuff through the winter. So they're running, it's kind of getting tacked onto our bill. So the people, who are getting those kinds of things, a lot of times it doesn't have anything to do with them. It's just basic, crappy infrastructure. That's what it is. But you have to look at, we're in a point in time where 80% of Americans are on food stamps. That's a stark realization. And it should be a stark realization for all people that if 80% of Americans are on food stamps, and you got to be really, really poor to be on food stamps, how do you expect to be able to pay for their basic needs? That's when you have to restructure society around basic needs. You have to restructure all of these things to make sure everybody has access to them.
I often think of Detroit as where the rest of the world or United States will be in 10 years or 15 years. So this is coming, but it's just the devastation has really impacted Detroit first. This devastation of priority over profit and capitalism, just deprioritizing people's health and also making profit off our illness. Food stamps, Walmart makes all the money there. Mm-hmm. And as you're saying now, making money off, shutting off people's water, taking their children, creating homelessness mm-hmm. and empty homes. So,
well, you can see that Detroit is ground zero because that happened last year, and you don't have to look any further than Baltimore this year to see that that's, you know, kind of spreading, not just Baltimore, but all over the world. I mean, really all over the world, people are getting shut off by private corporations. We've got a private corporation that was put in place by our illegal, unconstitutional emergency manager here in Detroit, and that Veolia, and they are dictating. Right now, they're writing the rules. Right.
And so this morning we had a water ceremony just to tie things in. And I'm just wondering what that was like for you, if you'd be willing to say. It was some indigenous leaders from around this area who came in and shared a ceremony with us, involved us in a water ceremony. Would you say a little bit about that for yourself?
For me, this work is deeply spiritual. You can't be committed and work 24 hours a day the way that activists do not to be. So being a part of a water ceremony like that with people from around the world and really embodying the water, and I felt very grateful to be there, and I felt like my energy needed it. Like my whole being needed to be in that space, feeling a lot of love from the people around me, and I felt completely immersed in the moment and very special, and I felt very, very grateful to be there.
Well, it's an honor to be here with you and learn from your work and your community, so thank you for all you do and for sharing it with us.
Thank you. Valerie Jean.
You've been listening to a one-on-one conversation with Monica Beamer from KBOO and Valerie Jean from Detroit, Michigan. Thank you. This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Detroit, Michigan on Ground Zero at the Water Affordability and Housing Summit. And I'm here with
Daryl Jordan.
And Daryl, what organization are you with?
I'm with the East Michigan Environmental Action Council.
And can you tell us what the organization do?
We work on climate change, environmental justice, food sovereignty, broadly defined people-centered environmental justice organization.
And you come to this summit, why are you here at this?
Our organization, like a lot of the organizations in Detroit, we have to support each other and work together, because when we start talking about water, we're talking about the essence of life, you know, and folks are chasing us out of Detroit. We have to stand together. And so that's the reason I'm here, to do whatever I can to help out.
And so what do you think about all this gathering?
I thought this was a great 3 days. I thought that there was a lot of good information shared, a lot of good connections made, and hopefully some strategies and plans that will keep us moving in the same direction and having some impact wherever we are.
Okay. And do you think some headway was made, or are we going to do something about it?
Oh, I think a lot of headway was made, just in terms of learning that we're not the only ones with this problem, and figuring out how we can support each other and give each other information that can help us move this struggle along. You know, when the water's gone, we're gone. For the most part, I keep hearing people say for the last 3 days, water is life. And that's true. There is no life when there is no water. And so somebody got to wake the corporations up and the folks who make decisions for us, you know?
So now that we know that the corporation, I'm glad you said that, because we know that there's corporation rights and there's human rights. But corporation rights supersedes human rights, because all the laws are protecting them, not us. Mm-hmm. And now, how can we connect this
with houses?
With
houses, homes.
Well, I think they're all connected, you know. The struggle for the water, the pushing people out of houses, the lack of available housing because businessmen want more money than their housing is worth. I think it's all related. It's all related to the fact that police have decided that one of the ways that they make cities safe is to kill anything that looks like it might be a threat to tourism and people with higher incomes. Everything is related, and as soon as we figure that out, then maybe we'll really begin to see some major changes here in this country, you know?
And I'm hearing that from not just Detroit, but from a lot of places, that people water bill, some of them are higher than their rent.
That's true, and that's the threat of privatization. But right now, they're playing that game to chase people out. So you have one suburb where they're paying $20 a month, and the next suburb, they're paying $60 a month. And all of this is, it's a part of a plan. You know, I know I can't speak for everywhere, but here in Detroit, they want to privatize the water. And so once they privatize it, then it's going to shoot sky high, because that seems to be the pattern. Once somebody owns it, then the price goes up. And so I think this is just about our corporations continuing to get rich at the expense of poor and working class people. And for those people who assume that they're middle class and upper middle class, they better wake up, because today is us and tomorrow is you.
You hear that? The alarm clock is going off. Cut it off. And so in doing this, on creating this, what they're doing is taking, like, it's no more they're trying to get rid of public housing, public welfare. They're going to get rid of public schools, not public water. So that means Monopoly is going to have to change their game, because there ain't going to be no public works no more. It's going to be private works, right?
Yeah, that's what it's about. You know, the rich going to continue to get richer, and when they kill off all the poor working class, middle class, and upper middle class, then we're going to find out that there's not going to be nothing left anyway. They're going to have destroyed the world. Yeah. Wake folks up. Wake them up.
Is there anything else you want to say before we go on?
It's time for us to rise up, raise hell. That's the only thing that's going to save us.
Didn't Harold Melvin and Blue Note sing that song, Wake Up Everybody?
Wake up everybody. Some folks done, you don't want me to sing, but some folks done slept already way too long. Rise up, raise hell. There you go.
You're my piece of the rock, and I love you, CC. And you dig it. Hey, we didn't get our 40 acres and a mule, but we did get you, CC. Yeah. Gaining on ya. Moving in around ya. God bless CC.
This is Abraham Lubar from Right to Survive Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Ground Zero, Detroit, Michigan, at the Water Affordability and Housing Summit. And I'm here with
Tanessa Savitsky from Cleveland, Ohio.
And what do you do in Cleveland, Ohio? I know you probably go to school, but what's your organization?
So I actually just graduated last weekend, and I just took a job with United Clevelanders Against Poverty. So we're trying to work with banks and corporations to get fairer lending for people for housing. We're trying to, like, provide services for people in terms of managing their financial resources and things like that. People who aren't financially sound, so we help them do that kind of work so that they can put themselves in a stable situation with housing and finances. And there's other things we're working on as well, but they're in the works. Yeah.
Okay. And you graduated from high school?
I graduated from college, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. That's okay.
Common mistake.
Okay, well, you still are youth. I just want people to know that our youth is being involved in helping create a better country and a better world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, what do you think about this summit? What brought you here?
So my organization actually brought me here. This is actually one of the first things I'm doing with my organization, is coming here to this international conference on affordable housing and water. So this was a great event to come to take away things back to our community in Cleveland. The water situation in Cleveland isn't the same as it is here in Detroit, but we do have the problem of water infrastructure, as the leader of our organization was talking about earlier, in terms of our pipelines keep busting in the streets, and we need to figure out a better way to take care of that, because fixing that is incredibly expensive and will cost the poor people in our area. So anyway, I just learned a lot while I was here on the tour in Detroit. I saw the reality of the situation, especially when they mentioned that Child Protective Services comes in as soon as water is shut off. To me, that stood out as an issue because I'm thinking family and children are being affected by this. This is perpetuating a cycle of oppression against the same types of marginalized groups of people. And it's not just the water situation, but all these other factors, Child Protective Services, the fact that neighbors, if you know that your neighbor's water shut off, you're required by law to report it. All of these things are contributing to oppressing these groups. So there's a lot of different aspects to work on and to attack, but I learned a lot about that, and I'm hoping to take some of these strategies back to Cleveland.
So do you think the water situation here is creating houselessness?
I do. Because once water is shut off and the house is deemed unsafe, that creates a problem for the families living there. And, you know, a lot of families are getting evicted out of houses that are literally worth almost nothing. And then these houses are going off in the market and banks are buying them. And, you know, instead of people being able to come in and build up those houses themselves, which was a common thing talked about in this summit, was that people were trying to take these abandoned houses, build them up, and then live in them, but then the banks were kicking them right out. So, yes, absolutely.
So what do you call that? I know I can say it, but I can't lead you on. So what would you call that type of depression of aggression against humans?
We call that oppression of marginalized groups, gentrification. Absolutely. And that's, you know, again, bringing this back to relate it to my community, as our university is expanding, it's, you know, it's trying to make the area nicer, but at the same time we're not taking into account how we're just continually pushing everyone onto the east side. It seems like that is sort of happening here with Wayne County College. Mm-hmm. So I just noticed that similarity right away, how universities, you know, there's some things that are happening that are good in revitalizing the area, but they're not paying attention to what gentrification is doing.
Okay. So I know, are your parents proud or happy that you're an activist or an anarchist or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, they are proud. My mom is from the Philippines. She, you know, she dealt with a lot of issues growing up in a third world country. Actually, housing and water, landlessness is a common term there because the land being appropriated by the Philippine government is, you know, the way it's happening is completely unfair. And they have water issues too. Beyond not having water, they also have problems with their maritime borders, with other countries coming in and taking advantage of their coral reefs and their resources in the ocean. So this is global. This water problem is global, and water and housing are inextricably related. So
I'm older myself. Mm-hmm. I just say I'm mature, okay? That way. So I want to hear from a young mind, what can we do to solve this water situation?
Loaded question. I like to speak in terms of the youth. Like, what I know best right now, since I just joined my organization, I'm still getting attuned to, like, legislature and things like that. So in terms of what the youth can do, I think we need to inspire youth activism and education. We're not teaching students, we're not teaching our youth in school how these problems are socioeconomic problems. I mean, you might learn it in a sociology class in college, but I mean, in high school, I wouldn't have understood this entire context, especially without going out and learning it myself. So we need spaces where we can radically educate the youth on these issues, and then give them a space where they can feel free to talk about it outside of institutional and academic settings. We need a place, creative spaces, where they can express themselves freely. So
do you think the government, they used to use land to control, they still do in a way. They used to use money, and in a way they still control. How do you think they're using water to control?
I do think they're using water to control. I mean, they really don't seem to care what's happening to families and children, and that, you know, that just shows their complete disregard. I mean, this is all part of the capitalistic, you know, this is all part of capitalism because, you know, as I learned myself on the tour, Marathon, a woman, side of her house got burned. She got burns on her skin, and it was absolutely related to what Marathon was, projects that they had running in her area. Yet they are paying off the doctors in the hospitals to claim that, you know, to say that this wasn't related to Marathon's, like, projects. So, yeah, there's a lot of corruption between government and big companies, obviously, because they're, this money and funding, it's just staying between them, but nothing is dripping down to the poor.
So now that we learned that they use water, electric, land, and money to control, do you think they're going to use air next?
Who knows? I'll just say I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay. Is there anything else you would like to tell a listener about what you do, your organization, what you learned here, or anything?
Again, I really do want to stress, and someone else at this conference brought up this point, bring your children, bring your little sisters and brothers, bring your siblings to meetings like this, to conferences like this, anything like this when you can get the chance. Also, try and organize your community. It's hard to like find like-minded people sometimes, but they are there. So try and find ways, especially social media is a great way to get people together. Have meetings, talk about what's going on, and then just continue to organize and keep in touch. Don't just have one meeting and disappear and lose everyone's contact info. You need to keep talking about these issues. Bring the youth so that they can talk about it with their friends and spread awareness and education, because they're the next generation. So
also, I was in the audience when you did your poem.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just say a little skip? The last one you did, I think that was the most powerful one, right?
Really?
There. Yeah, about the women, right?
Yeah.
Let's say a little, maybe minute or 30 seconds. Or
okay,
something.
Let me pull it up real quick.
That was great.
Thank you. Okay. The city planners built the suburbs to banish. We're dying on the outskirts and they're glad to see us vanish. In banishment, we ration under the rationale of their actions, but our gangs and unions do no more harm than their fiscal factions. The diaspora does not flourish like fauna and flora. This land cannot nourish the poor, doors close to minorities while the rich soar, and take what's yours for an unsettled score. I feel bad for your children, they did nothing to earn you. And for the sake of the future, I hope that they can unlearn you and not watch the world burn, but turn to discern truth. I'm an illegal by nature. You want my documentation while you colonize my island and call it your vacation? Your militia, your riches, take it with you. Take your pictures with my indigenous sisters, trick them into thinking you fixed us when you're just fixing your image. I might speak in your language, but I sing in my own tone. I might eat your food, but it's food that I have grown. You might invade my water, but all that salt won't quench your thirst. You might conquer the island, but the island was mine first. So I fight, because I too am entitled. No, I will not stand idle. I'll come at you with the force that's title, but in the form of a subtle rebuttal. I'll gut you without a stutter, leave you befuddled. You'll shuttle away, muttering as you shudder at your own utter ignorance. Send these words to your mother.
That's awesome, man. Thank you, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, say, give more power to the people. Oh, God, say, give more power to the people. Cutters trying to see who's got the power to kill them all. When they run out of power, the world's gonna this be is Ibrahim Lubar from Right to Survive Radio, KBOO. 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Detroit, Michigan at the Waterworks Affordability and Housing Summit. I'm here in the houseless community on Ground Zero talking with
Carmen Gray from Cleveland, Ohio.
And Carmen, what brings you here to Detroit today?
Well, when I heard about the oppressions about the waters being cut off, I got a little concerned because I saw years ago a documentary in which another country was using water to control the people with labor. They was protesting and so forth. And so then that large corporation say, well, you know, they keep going on strike, so the job is not a need. Let's deal with the water. So now those people began to conform because they had the control over the water. And then what was happening, that anybody else who began to speak out, the villagers would attack them, say, don't bring that negative heat on us because they're going to take our water. And so it was a way of suppressing, like the Willie Lynch syndrome overseas. And that was several years ago. So for it to be, now I'm hearing it coming close to home, it resonated with me. And Detroit is not that far from Cleveland. So I feel there's an infection that's on its way to my doors. And I'd rather prevent it than cure it.
So you think this is a spreading thing? What is the mechanism of control that the capitalists found a way, because they know money is going out, right?
Right. Well, initially, I think they was first thinking about the debt, but then greed kept it and say, well, you know, if they go, we get them off the land. We don't want the houses. We just want the land, because that's good prime real estate down there. We can just get rid of those unlikables.
So why do you think they're doing that here in America in one of, we call Detroit, Cleveland, Chicago, CCs, and those are chocolate city. Why do you think that's happening here in the richest country, most powerful country per se in the world?
It is my opinion, but does not make it fact, that, you know, in village, in any communities where there are low or oppressed people, financially restrained people, reading is not a big thing. So they put these documents and legislations in writings, and then, because they say if you put it in writing, you don't have to worry. These areas are areas near the water. They're prime real estate and it's marketable. And you find that where we used to be, everybody moved away from the inner city, and then now they're moving away back in, but they can't get in until they get us out. So I think it's a way to come after a group of people and push them out, and they don't want to care. The results is not their concern as far as the people. Their end result is what matters.
And do you think, how do this tie in with the houseless community?
Well, you know, people who are houseless are already living without water. You know, they're already living without water, and they're living without utilities, and they're going for pillar to point. But it was their situation is more pronounced because now we get to see there's no structure to hide the faces. You know, these people who the people who are now living without water, in a lot of essence, they're homeless too, because that is not a home, that's just a structure.
Without a home, without water, and you're right. So how can we? First of all, what do you? Are you with an organization or are you just individual?
Well, I came in solidarity with a group called United Clevelanders Against Poverty. Mm-hmm. You know, but I've been an advocate of many venues, and I'm a member of that group, and so I just wanted to come here and see what was going on, because I personally, you know, and I'm taking some personal responsibility. I can't speak for no one else, but it came a time in the life where I had to get on a corporate leash to be able to sustain a lifestyle or pay for something, and I thought I would just go there for a little bit of time. And then I'll come back and I get back into the fight. But what happened was the leash got so tight and you got so tired that you was too tired to come off the leash. You was too tired to look for other options. And then you end up creating these lifestyles that make you become more dependent on it. So you can't even come off.
So this is just some curiosity question that I always have. Do you think the American government are practicing on the houseless people, or different countries didn't practice on the houseless people and then practice takeover to the
this is a pilot program. This is a test pilot. We'll start with them where they're the undesirable. It won't get as much of a public award because not everybody can identify with that situation. Once we get them to conform, we now know what to do and what not to do. So when we bring it to your doors, we're really well trained. Yeah, and trust me, America, if you're listening, this problem is coming to a theater near you.
Now that you travel and you've seen poor people in different countries and different places, how do you look at a houseless person now?
Well, for me, I come from a family of missionaries. Okay. So we would go out to look for the houseless person, you know. And I went in with them when they got me when I was 9. And I was mad at them. I was like, they put me with the wrong family. These people poured in my folks. You know, and they got me doing all this crazy. I just wanted to go to sleep. But I'm glad that I had that experience because it gave me some insights. And I remember when I came back to America to start my pilgrimage to find my parents, in a sense, I was the same way because I snuck off and I was sleeping in hospitals and taking showers in rec centers just so I could try to find my parents because I didn't know where they were at. I went to New York, so forth. So I have some little bit of identity, and I learned how to survive in those conditions from the homeless. They was like, well, girl, you need to put some socks on and some plastic bags on your shoes. You don't need to carry all them bags. Wear your clothes on you. You're going to layer up. You're going to look a little fatter, but you know what I'm saying? So they taught me some survival skills. So then actually when I became a parent myself and dealt with situations where I wasn't able to meet all my family needs, I was like, y'all put some extra socks on, some plastic bags on, and you know what? We're not sure where we're going, but you put on, we ain't gonna carry all these bags. You wear your clothes on your back, all five pieces of it, and you know, it was just some survival skills that resonate with me. You know,
so do you see these big cities, and we know that corporation rights and human rights have a big gap, and corporation rights are superseding our human rights. So do you think these big cities are being taken over? I know they added emergency mayor or governor or something in Detroit. Are you think the corporations are taking over the cities and we resorting back to the way it used to be, the monarchy and the commoners?
We're getting rid of, that's why we're getting rid of the middle class is going away. And what it is they, by getting rid of it, you make them despise the poor. It's not tangible to get to that upper class. And then they despise the poor because they see how browbeaten and they don't want to identify with that, you know? And they become NIMBYs. They'll come and feed you and this, but at the end of the day, you're not welcome here. You can't live here. You can't talk to my children. Don't go to my school. You know, because, and that means NIMBY is not in my backyard, you know, for those who don't know. So what I'm just trying to say is we have some people who just come and do the work from a distance. And they do the work because it's a good photo op. And it's going to look good on my resume. And when I run for the mayor, I can say, I did this. But they never identify with it. And back to your question, that I believe that is where we're getting to a privatization. You know, we get rid of the union, so you can't have that much control. We'll put you in a position where you're going to either do what I tell you, or you just be gone because there's 20 people behind you who want this position.
Thank you very much, Carmen. And before we go off, thank you for coming in. Thank you for talking.
You've been paying me with country, right, slavery, and change. So don't touch me, Whitey. And don't look surprised. No, I'm no longer fooled by your tricks and your lies. I'm aware of your game and of your history. And I'm aware of the Judas that you have been to me. So watch out.
This
me,
is
white
Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM. Today, I'm on Ground Zero in Detroit, Michigan, at the Water Affordability and Housing Summit. And here with me is
Jay Gilbert Sanchez, Santa Fe New Mexico Tribal Environmental Alliance, TEWA, Executive Director.
And what do your organization do?
We stand up for all the people that are oppressed, the people that do not have voice, or the natural beings that do not have voice. We stand for them and we speak on their behalf with their permission.
With their permission. What brings you here today?
Well, we're invited to come and listen or to talk about water and the situation as is, and the water situation as I find it here in Detroit is very dismaying and a domestic act of terrorism against people of color, people impoverished.
Seeing a collective group of people from different parts of the world and different organizations doing different things, does this inspire you more to do the work you're doing?
Well, yesterday's presentation by the youth, which I happened to be able to sit in on, was the most inspiring situation I've been in a very, very long time, and I've been an activist in over 70 years. And so it's really great to see and hear the youth and the respect that they laid out their presentations, especially for addressing the elderly and the children as their main way of doing things. That was wonderful. I was so inspired. I almost had tears in my eyes.
Wow, that's great. In learning, like I did, that people are being denied water access, what do you think about this country, this government, powers to be, the decision makers?
Well, water is life. And anytime you deny people water, that is a form of genocide. I have to address it in the format that I am accustomed to, and to say that this is a very direct form, parallel form of domestic terrorism being committed by one man, one government as a whole.
So is this a governmental direct action against people or poor people?
It's a direct action against people of color, and it does not matter what financial situation or educational system you're in. I think this is a form of cleansing that is taking place. As I said, it's domestic terrorism. It is a form of genocide against people of color, and that does not exclude anybody who is not of that color or who is improvised. Their own people, they're willing to sacrifice them as well just to keep control of their form of government we have and to remain the majority as it is.
Well, In two of the interviews I did earlier, we talked about CCs. And for the listening audience, we educate not only the house people, but the unhoused too. And CC means Chocolate City. And I noticed all the big cities that's Chocolate City, like Cleveland, Detroit, Chicago, Jackson, Mississippi, and others, that mass terrorist act against people of color is happening by the government. However, it's spilling over into, like you said, other ethnicities. Why is the government using water as an attack form on people?
I can't speak for the government, but, you know, I can speak only from where I, the perspective that I have, and that is that what they're trying to do is to try to eliminate, because they know that the resources are becoming limited because of the population growth in the, on this earth. And so they're wanting to ensure that they have, they, those that have the financial resources and that are not of people of color, that they're ensuring their survivability into the next millennium. But at the same time, they're out there looking for places where they're gonna, where they're supposed to rocket to get away from Earth after they deplete all the resources on this Earth. So, you know, other than that, I don't know what else to say, but this is an act of terrorism against the people of color in this country, and the improvised poor whites in this country. They don't want to deal with that. They don't want to see us. They don't want to look at us. They don't want us to be there. They don't want us to become the decision makers. And that's where it is. It's all about power. But once a person takes power, gets power, just like in the previous kingdoms or in the dynasties or whatever, the person who takes that position is always the one that does not know how to rule or does not know what his people want. He enforces or forces upon them his or her will.
So let me try to summarize what you're saying, because you're saying some good stuff that's, wow, mind-boggling. It's a terrorist act against people of color, and it's spilling over into the white poor people, and this being affected by them, and they trying to get rid of us because we have unlimited resources. So when King James or John or Queen Victoria sent the pilgrimage here, they chased their desirables away and put us on the ship and brought us to this country. Now they not sending us away. They gonna leave us here. They going to another planet.
That's so true. I mean, that's what their goal is, to find a place where they can populate it with their own kind, rich white people. And that's the only way I can describe it. I can't say it any other way. I'm sorry. I'm not a racist. I don't want to be seen as a racist, but, you know, that's their goal. That is their goal. And it doesn't matter whether they're Republican or Democrat. It's all the same. They're all in the same boat.
So how can we tie this over to people being houseless or houselessness? Because when I was growing up, to see someone living on the street, we called them bums, hobo, tramps, and it became transients and gin, reconnaissance. And now when I was became homeless, I knew the real reason I was houseless. And now this privatizing water is making people houseless.
Certainly is. And, you know, this, again, this is a form of genocide. You cannot cover it. It's genocide carried on by a single terrorist known as the manager there, you know. And so he is the key person appointed by someone in authority and only responsible to that authority. But just like in any other things that are there, the legends that are there, the movies that are made about evilness and whatnot, if you cut off the head of the snake, the rest of the snake's going to die, and things are going to be better. So that's what people need to do, is to get out there and to make sure that their votes count and they vote for the people that are willing to give and sacrifice to make it better and better situation. And as people have been, I've been hearing people throughout my years of activism, to wage love and not war. but wage in love and compassion for your fellow man and fellow beings on this earth, and having a coexistence in the holistic way as we as Native Americans have been doing for centuries, and not killing our mother, our earth mother, within 300-400 years of when they've come here from their homelands on the eastern side of the ocean. You know, this is what it is. And in a sense that in our prophecies, we were told that, you know, our younger brothers of lighter skin and blue eyes, blonde hair, were going to show up on our shores, and that we're not supposed to discourage them, but to bring them into our homes and show them the way of life. And we have not been able to do that because they came in destructively and et cetera, et cetera. And I think you hit the nail right on the head. When the European kingdoms sent their people over here, they didn't send the quality of people that we're asking, or that the laws are saying should be brought here today. They sent over the prisoners. So, you know, those of you who can claim your ancestry 20 generations back or the time of colonization, don't forget your ancestors were either rapists, murderers, thieves, ambassadors, or whatever, but you were the product of your own societies as being the most least desirable that was sent here.
How can we stop, in your opinion, how can we stop this mass mobilization of genocide?
Well, people are going to have to get educated. People are going to have to realize, and they're going to have to look deep in their hearts of and practice the spirituality that is taught to them by their creator of sharing and loving and taking only what they can use, not to exploit it to their benefit, to hoard millions and millions of dollars in their pocket or whatnot, because they're not taking that wealth with them when they leave here. Maybe when they go to the next planet, but not when they leave this earth, you know. And, you know, we just have to understand. And like I said, we need to wage a real international, global war of love onto this earth.
So in spirituality, I was a Christian before, and I'm a Muslim. It all teaches love your neighbor, and love will conquer all. So we need to educate the decision maker. Love.
That certainly is true, and I don't care which organized or Western religion you believe in or you have faith in. Your creator, in his first statements in all the religions, I believe, is stated, do unto others as you want others to do unto you. If we just practice that, all of the hatred, all of the misguided love would be eliminated, and there would be truly a world of love. And I'm not saying a utopia of love, but a love that is going to help mankind survive into the next millennium.
I want to thank you much, and I wish you well in your organization, and I hope that we can conquer this hatred.
We understand all the more deeply as Boston becomes Birmingham, becomes Little Rock, becomes Selma, becomes Philadelphia, Mississippi, becomes yesterday all over again. We understand, and we beg your pardon. We beg your pardon, America, because we have an understanding of karma. What goes around comes around. And we beg your pardon for all of the lives and all of the people who've been ruined, and who look forward to next year because they cannot stand to look at this one. We beg your pardon, America, because the pardon you gave this time was not yours to give. Thank you very much.
Engelbert Humperdinck, the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive and Right to Dream 2. As of yet, I've been traveling from different states and different cities, trying to help them address their houseless problem by either consulting them and building tent cities like Dignity Village or rest areas like Right to Dream 2. Each city I go in have their own magnified problem in the houseless community. Each organization that I talk with in that city, whether it's a social service agency or a grassroots organization such as Right to Dream 2 and Right to Survive that's trying to help, are very interested in the concept of decriminalizing houseless people for exercising their rights. In Tucson, Arizona, if you have a felony, you know, like getting caught with a roach, you cannot get any social service help. You can't get housing. You can't get food stamps. You can't go into shelters. You can't get SSI. You just dormant. You just out there on your own. And what they doing to criminalize the houseless people is going up to somebody who can't work. I mean, who's willing to work, but people not willing to employ these people. Who's willing to eat, but can't utilize the social service to get food stamps, and willing to get in houses, but they won't rent to these people. Asking them, if you point me where I can go get some drugs, I'll give you $20. What person who can't eat, who's not allowed to eat or rent out of housing or drink water, gonna turn down $20 just for pointing? If you point or direct these people, these undercover slobs, whatever you wanna call them, you get arrested again. And that goes even farther, pushing you down the line of productivity. Again, in Denver, the big argument about not having a Right to Rest Act bill, it's because they don't want to make the houseless community a protective class. Well, let's see. In Jackson, Mississippi, they're struggling, but I didn't get to know too much about their homeless situation because they didn't want to talk about their situation. So they do have places where people to go, but I don't know. I just seen the place, how barren it looked. Detroit is considered the worst place that I've been in since I've been traveling throughout this country, that I don't think it's any service. I don't think it's any police. I don't think it's any mailman. I think that everything is being privatized. And these different loops, and when I come back here to Portland, as tragic and hard that it may be about this constant sweeps that they're criminalizing people for sleeping on the streets, I still think that we have a lot of work to do before those situations or those concepts migrate to the city officials, the power to be here. This is a two-part series, and I hope you'll join us next month for more interviews and listen to people explain their situation in their city, in their state, or in their country on the Michigan Welfare Rights on their summit of water and housing affordability. We have a Right to Survive meeting tomorrow at Sister of the Rose Cafe on 6th Northwest Davis at 5 p.m. We have U.S. Social Forum going to be in San Jose, California from the 23rd to the 29th of June. We have self-defense classes this week in the Terry Shrunk Park. The Homeless Bill of Rights meeting is this Friday at Sister of the Rose Cafe at 4 o'clock. Next Tuesday, this upcoming Tuesday, we have an Under the Bridge Walk where we meet at Right to Dream 2 on 4th and Burnside Northwest at 6 o'clock p.m. And we have a fundraiser also July 11th, the Best Graffiti Artist in Portland. So look for the stickers, look at our Facebook, come to our website, or even come to our meetings and Right to Dream to our location to find out more. Thank you very much for listening.